What is up, y'all? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a ton of comics that have come out this week, kicking off with Superman, Son of Kal-El, number one for DC Comics, written by Tom Taylor, art by John Timms. Now, you probably figured this out from the title, but this is focusing on Jonathan Kent, who is kind of the new Superman, not exactly Superboy anymore. Superman is slowly losing his powers, so John is figuring out, do I have what it takes to be the new Superman, assuming that mantle, and that's what they're dealing with here. Justin, I'm curious to hear from you. You've been super into a lot of the Superman titles. How'd this one work for you?
I like this a lot, and I have been. I was a big fan of the Super Sons series. It was going around for a while. So I was really happy to see Damian featured here. Yeah. The aging up of our son of Kal-El here is always a little weird to me. And those little things, like, I don't quite, you don't love it. But I do think it's handled really well here. I like the way they talk about how his powers are going to be working and how he is sort of this, like, more powerful and unique being in the DC universe, which is something that I feel like we haven't really talked about too much in the different appearances of the character. So I thought this was great.
Pete, what about you?
I agree. There were some really cool covers where you have like Robin being carried and he's got like his arms crossed and he looks all curmudgeon-y. I thought that was hilarious.
Did you read the book or just check out?
Could
the
you fucking let me get past, right. You know, Jesus Christ. I love the kind of like talking it out while they're fighting the ninjas. I thought this was like really fun and great way to explore the characters and their relationship that they have. And I'm glad that they're focusing on it because it is such a cool part about these two characters. And yeah, I thought the art was really, really well done for this. And as far as like first issues go, I thought it really knocked it out of the park. Got you excited for more.
And where the book lands, sort of the direction for it, where truth, justice in a better world, as opposed to truth, justice in the American way, yep. Sort of looking beyond America and sort of tackling problems that feel very current, I think is a great area for this character to explore.
This had big Zero issue energy to me.
Oh, how dare you?
I know you don't like them. I don't mind a good Zero issue. I think this does a really good job, like you guys have been saying, of setting up the character of John, setting up where he is emotionally, checking in with him and his relationship with Damian. Really liked all of that stuff. But where we got to at the end is where I wanted to be at the beginning of the issue. I want to see what's the conflict, what's the idea, where is this book going? And I'm excited to see that. I mean, this feels like shades of Tom Taylor did X-Men Red as well, right? Which was the proactive X-Men team. And this feels like this might head in those directions a bit, which is interesting, particularly since we've had teases that Jonathan Kent might go wrong. Like, there might be something that he does that is un-Superman-like, and I'm curious to see where that goes from here. As you mentioned, the art is really good as well, but this felt like a holding of a breath before we get to the main thing that's going to happen in this title.
But I'm excited. Holding of a breath, okay.
I'm sorry.
Clutching of the pearls?
A clutching of the pearls, a holding of the breath. Alex, feeling it this week. Emotional week for Alex, maybe.
Big week. Let's move on then to talk about Amazing Fantasy number one from Marvel by Kare Andrews. This is a big return for the writer-artist to Marvel. Here, we are getting, gosh, I don't even know what it is. It's not a out-of-time story necessarily, but what we are told, this is spoilers for the book, but we get to see Spider-Man, Black Widow, and Captain America at the moments that they die. They are transported to another dimension that is very 1950s, 1960s sci-fi, as implied by the title. There are dinosaur creatures. There's weird aliens.
Sort of manticore?
Manticores and things like that.
Flying lion?
I did not know what to expect. I was very excited to not know what to expect going in here. And as usual with the Kare Andrews book, was really blown away, but mostly very intrigued.
I love Kare Andrews. Really liked the Iron Fist series.
Oh, yeah,
years
dude.
Back. Really liked that. Great to see. Great to read this book. I think the premise is really interesting. I love taking these characters just out of their contexts. I'm curious to see what the idea here is with death being the sort of what brings them together. There's a reveal later on in the Spider-Man story that I thought was really cool. I'm looking forward to see how that plays out.
I just feel like this is a perfect example of art meeting a cool idea in the best way. I think this artist working on this comic, it makes it legendary. The way Captain America looks in this is very enjoyable. The flying lion is fantastic. I mean, Manticore? The spider, whatever title you're giving it, sure. The Spider-Man reveal, but the way Spider-Man and Black Widow are drawn is it's a really a fun book, and it's very creative and cool.
You can't get behind that Spider-Man fun?
I can't, no. No, I can't.
Wow.
But it was cool, though.
I'm very excited to follow this going forward. Next up, Gru.
Alex, are you talking about our argument?
Yes. Gru meets Tarzan, number one from Dark Horse Comics, written by Sergio Aragonés and Mark Vanier, art by Sergio Aragonés and Thomas Yeats. As implied by the title, technically at some point, I guess, down the road, Gru is going to meet Tarzan. That's not what happens in this issue. Nope. Instead, we get three storylines, one with Tarzan, one with Gru, and one with Sergio Aragonés and Mark Vanier at a comic convention talking about wouldn't it be fun to do a Gru meets Tarzan comic book. I was a huge Gru fan as a kid. Yeah. I loved it. I thought it was the funniest thing ever. So I was very trepidatious to read this again. But excited to kind of check it out because I haven't read a Gru comic book in a very long time. I don't know that it was the funniest thing I've ever read, but it certainly felt, from that perspective of youth, like a warm, comfortable blanket with the cheese dip jokes, with Roberto making fun of Gru the entire time. I enjoyed this. I like this. But what did you guys think? I don't know if you have the same affection for Gru.
It feels like there's a baked-in apology into your review of this book, Alex.
I'm sorry, you guys. I'm sorry I put this third in the lineup.
You don't need to apologize.
I feel so bad.
I thought I was, I casually read Gru. I wasn't a Gru guy. I wasn't a Gru like you are. Mm-hmm. But I do think that it's fun. I really liked actually the sort of the Comic-Con and the Sergio Mark side of it. I did find the tonal shifts between the Gru and Tarzan stuff to be a bit extreme. Gru is like, I'm a goof, cheese dip. And then Tarzan's like, where is this slave ship from? Yeah. So it's like, okay, guys, wow. Interesting choices. But it feels like these creators have the confidence to bring these storylines together in a way. It feels like they're almost seeking out the different tonal situations with these characters and are trying to find a way to bring them together. So despite the jarring nature of this, I feel like they'll probably pull it off.
Pete, what about you? What was your take?
When I was younger, I thought Gru was cool.
You got cool, Pete. That's what happened.
I don't know about that. Yeah, I mean, there's just some weird kind of moments now in the Gru stuff that I'm like, what is the point of this? Like, what does this mean? Like, what are you trying to say about comic conventions? Because it's this thing where he's like, man, if one more person thinks I'm a different famous person, I'ma lose it. And then this attractive woman comes up to him and says the thing that he's supposed to lose it over, and he doesn't. He ends up like
I took like, all what? Of that as very self-effacing, honestly. I understand what you're saying, and I understand the sensitivity there. But that's Sergio Aragonés, the running bit is him getting mistaken for the creator of Spy versus Spy.
Right.
Fun. Which is very silly. And then later on, they talk to him about his fold-ins and everything. But him immediately being like, yeah, sure, I'll draw Spy versus Spy for this pretty lady is very, like, the joke in my mind is on him doing that. It's not on, like, hubba hubba, sexy ladies are sexy, or anything like that, you know?
Yeah, I feel like it's about him being a hypocrite, and exactly. I thought it was, I hear why your alarm bells went off, Pete, but I don't think it was super offensive.
And another thing on that note with Sergio Aragonés, like, he is known as the bad magazine guy, he is known as the Gru guy, but that double page spread of the Comic-Con is crazy.
So cool.
Oh my gosh, just so much going on there. So many jokes, so many tiny little things happening. I thought that was great. So I was pleasantly surprised by this comic, I thought. Let's move on to another one. Sweet Paprika, number one from Image Comics by Mirka Andolfo. This is a creator that has blown up in a very big way lately. I believe, I could be wrong about this, but I believe this is one of her first big things that is now finally coming out of the United States from Image Comics. It's about a devil who is a book publisher. She is very terrible boss at work, very pent up sexually at home. Both of those things are going on at the same time. There is a sexually free delivery boy. Maybe they're on a collision course of some point. I have been enjoying Mirka Andolfo's work. I think her cartooning style is really good. She's been doing some writing for DC as well. That's good. Curious to hear what you guys thought about this comic in particular.
Well, I think the
pause for effect.
Yeah, the art is great. I love the kind of like cartoonish, but also can be serious and scary at some points. You know, I think that like I'm happy that it's a woman writing this and doing this stuff, and it's, you know, like, hey, cool, like definitely get your groove on with whatever you want to. But I wasn't sure what the thing was with delivery dudes, but I guess
they're fun. And plus they're right at your house. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's an easy transition. Yeah. It's like, I ordered dinner, but I also ordered a date.
Well, I don't know if you should do that.
What do you think, Justin?
You can click a box on Seamless if you're like single and ready to hang out. It makes it seamless.
Same thing on Uber Eats. It's an extra fee though.
Yeah. I feel like the first half of this book, I felt like very much like work analog to devil stuff. And I was like, okay. The second half I thought really picked up when we got into the more interpersonal stuff and the more like internal to Paprika here. So I definitely, I liked it as it went on. In the beginning, I thought it was just like something we've seen before.
Yeah, Unnatural, which is another book that she did about this pig lady who finds out that she's destined for something more, I thought was very good and really well done. And like the art style was a little more developed. This is a little more cartoony, sketchier. I think she's going for more of a fun style. So not my favorite thing she's done, but I think it's worth reading and checking out anyway.
The anime kind of like fun of it is really great.
To your point, Justin, I'm curious to see where this goes in a second issue. Next up, The Other History of the DC Universe, number 5 from DC Comics, written by John Ridley, art by Giuseppe Camuncoli and Andrea Cucci. In a way, we are looping back to the first issue of the book that dealt with Black Lightning. Now we're focusing on one of his daughters and her development throughout the DC Universe. I thought this issue was great. I mean, every issue of this is great, but this issue in particular really popped for me, particularly for a character that, frankly, I don't know much about.
Yeah, that felt like sort of, I don't want to say a side character, but definitely like a smaller part of the DC universe here. And we really just get to explore so much of it. I'm surprised this book isn't getting more notoriety. Like, I think it's so good. It really is like this deep dive character exploration of characters that have been in the DC universe forever. Like, I don't think we get a lot of this type of storytelling in the DC universe. It felt Watchmen-esque a little bit in the way it sort of breaks down, takes these older stories and like gets into them and finds meaning in them that wasn't there beforehand. So I'm curious why it's not getting as much attention. It may be because there's so much like literal language here.
And well, it's a story that he's writing that Giuseppe Camuncoli and Andrea Cucci are illustrating versus straight like dialogue-driven comic books. So that might be part of it. It's very dense, but this is Thunder, right? Is the character not the other one is
Her sister, Jen, is Lightning. Yes.
Lightning, right. So it's Thunder, and where they get to with the resolution by the end, where it's just the family all talking to each other, which I have to assume was some bizarre thing that happened in an issue of Teen Titans or something like that, or Outsiders or whatever, is really one of the best Black Lightning stories that I've ever read, just in terms of his emotional development and treating him like a real character. I thought it was phenomenal. Pete, what did you take?
Yeah, first off, I agree. This is really powerful, what DC is putting out. I really wish more people were talking about it, because it's really great. I the art's unbelievable. The kind of way that the storytelling is brought to life in these stories are so great. The fact that, like, you know, one of the characters was just like, yo, Batman, like, don't even try this. Like, I've been here longer. Like, you can't just show up and claim the Outsiders. I thought that was so cool. I really loved the kind of characters dealing with the DC history in a way that kind of like voices how they felt about it going through it. I just think it's such a great thing, and I'm so happy that it's being done in such a powerful, cool way.
Yeah. And even beyond like the exploration of the emotional side, what it like race, everything there, gender, sexuality, the way we get into Thunder's powers is even super interesting. So like this is just checking off so many boxes of just great storytelling.
Yeah. And I probably should have, I'm trying to look this up right now and I don't see information on it, but I don't know if this is the last issue of the book. Maybe it is, because we brought it around to Black Lightning. If so, I think this is a great ending for this, and people should really go back and read and piece apart these five issues, because they've been fantastic. But hopefully there's more. I don't know what it would be about, but I'd be excited to read a sequel series if this is, in fact, the last thing.
For sure.
Speaking of which, let's move to another last issue, and I'm going to turn it almost immediately over to Pete to talk about Beta Ray Bill number 5 from Marvel by Daniel Warren Johnson. This is Beta Ray Bill finally making it mano a mano with Surtur for the Twilight Sword, trying to regain his, not humanity, Corbinite, something like that. But it brings everything to a close here in terms of the themes. How'd you feel, Pete? Did it bring it? Was it sufficient for you?
D.W. Jason would just really just he hammered it. It was just such a fun, cool story to get inside Beta Ray Bill's head as he deals with like who he really wants to be, like the outside matching the inside. What does he want to look like? What is right for him is really kind of cool and interesting. Just like the other kind of parts of the story, the kind of like kind of love thing that's going on with the ship is really cool and sad. But I mean, the fight sequences and the action, when there is a brawl, Daniel Warren Johnson draws fights, and like you feel the punches, you feel what's happening in such a cool actiony way. I just can't get enough of it. And just the sword stuff was just so badass. There's just some great stuff that I don't want to ruin, but unbelievable, like cool gun stuff, and it's enjoyable on many levels, and the art and the storytelling are just beautifully met.
I hate to use this term a little early, but a great head lopping in this comic.
Yeah, spoilers, dude. I was trying to not say that.
No, you don't know what I'm talking about. Nobody knows what I'm talking about unless you read the book. And I want to give a shout out. I agree with you, Pete. I thought this was great. Just great art, great fight sequences. I want to give a shout out to the supporting characters here, which I thought were awesome. Scourge was great here.
Scourge?
Pip the Troll. Scourge! Pip the Troll is so fun here. That's a character I want to see more of. I loved him back in the old Warlock and the Infinity Watch days. Like, bring that guy back, and then Scuttlebutt the Ship. Fun character.
Oh, man.
Little relish here. Yeah. I would love to love, like, if I had fell in love with my car, it's fun.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I really like this. I thought the series.
Alex.
You watch your goddamn mouth. You're lucky we're not doing a show together. You're lucky. Wait,
We are doing a show together.
Well, what I meant, like, I would punch you right now if we were in the same room. Face.
I wish it was a virtual
art
way to do
is
that.
Gorgeous. I thought this was great. I felt like this book, and I think it was purposely so, but it felt like it ended with ellipses instead of an exclamation point. It felt like there was more to say about Beta Ray Bill, say about
more.
The character.
You want them to want more. Here's
the thing. I understand that's a function of working in ongoing comics, and that's probably what's going on here, but the rest of this book has been so good and so big and so definitive. I wanted to see... obviously not an actual ending for Beta Ray Bill, but I wanted to see like a definitive endpoint here. What happens with him? What happens with his ship? What happens with, no, seriously, like there's a romantic relationship there. And I feel like we're left with a question mark of exactly what's going to happen. It feels like it's the sort of thing where like, oh, Beta Ray Bill is going to be in this Avengers crossover in a couple of months. So we got to leave him in this place at the end here. And that to me is a little frustrating. That's all.
I hear that.
Whoa, hold up. I'm sorry that whatever expectations you wrote in your head wasn't met here with what was happening. But, you know, sometimes it's not always having things come to a perfect ending. You know, these characters kind of live and breathe on their own and go through ups and downs. You can't sum up somebody's life all the time in five issues. I'm glad it all wasn't kind of cookie cuttered and brought perfectly back around, or there was a, you know, I liked the fact that there was space at the ending for more.
Pete, famous for loving open-ended endings to the series, Loki. But if I can sum up your take, Alex, maybe you got a Beta Ray Bill, but you wanted an Alpha Ray Bill.
Ooh.
That's exactly what I was thinking. Thank you for saying that. Let's move
on. You got
on
a Beta Ray Bill, but you wanted a Beta Ray William.
I think the first one was closer.
Will I am.
You just edit in the one that you think is better.
This is great. Let's just keep adding stuff to this. The Department of Truth
number post.
Yeah, sure. The Department of Truth number 11 from Image Comics, written by James Tynion IV, art by Martin Simmons. This is the second part of the Bigfoot arc, as we're finding out more about the truth behind Sasquatch himself, as our main characters wander through the woods. Justin, maybe I'm wrong about this, but I feel like this is one of your favorite books, but you've been off.
Yeah, you've missed like the last two. I'm so excited to hear what your thoughts are. We've been talking about this book without you. Come on.
How dare you, first off. Second, I would say I like the way this book is really settling into its sort of vibe and really moving through these American legends and conspiracy theories and things that people believe without a lot of real evidence. And the formula is set. It's like they have to put a stop to this thing before it causes damage. And then we get a great exploration of how Bigfoot, Sasquatch, Yeti, Abominable Snowman, all that came about. And then the characters really explored that. I like the text passages as well we get here. I do. I continue to love this book.
Pete, what about you?
I it's very creative and a ton of fun. I don't love it as much as Justin, but it's very cool. But the creepiness of it bothers me a little bit in a way that it's unsettling. Which
like
I think
the world.
It's on purpose. But, you know, I try to – this is supposed to be my happy place. So sometimes it gets to me a little bit.
Listen, sometimes there's not a clear ending there, Pete. That's what I'd say about it. Sometimes it leaves things open and you got to trust the process and trust the creators.
That's well said.
And Pete, if I may speak to your happy place.
Almost just call me Justin?
Yes, I did.
Really fixed it right at the end.
And, what are you drinking?
Sometimes
you're
happy.
Are you drinking paint?
It's just water. It's just water.
Let me be honest. There's probably a little paint in there, though, right?
It's just water.
The bottom of that label says just water. And then there's a tiny small print and paint.
Nope.
Pete, as we learned from Billy Madison, sometimes your happy place isn't always happy.
Oof. Oh, man.
This was my least favorite arc of this comic so far. I'm sorry. I feel like I'm such a negative Nelly on this episode.
You are.
But
what's going on?
I love Martin Simmons' art. Always good. Love the layouts. I love the creativity here. Like you were saying, Justin, going between the text pages and our characters. But I feel like there was too much reliance on just repeating what the conspiracy theory is and laying stuff out through nonstop dialogue here versus... The previous issues have done a really good job of juxtaposing a lot of very dense information with action at the same time. And other than the end of this issue and a little bit of the previous issue, I don't think we really got that in the past two issues of this arc.
Wow.
Interesting. Do you feel like it's because of the subject matter they're tackling is like more like, oh, we all know about this and we sort of all know this isn't real. So it feels like less edgy.
That might be it. That's possible. And I'm not worried about this book. I love this book too. And I'm very excited for whatever they're going to tackle next. The overarching thing that they're building up is very cool as well.
Do you think,
but this didn't quite hit me in the same way.
Do you think it's because maybe last night when you were preparing dinner, Marnie was like, this isn't very good. And you were kind of like, oh man, I worked really hard on this.
Wow. And then do you have some inside info? Do you have some inside info, Pete?
What are you talking about?
I'm just saying.
I made a great dinner last night.
What was it? Let us be the judge.
Oh, yeah. Boy. You're asking me to remember two dinners ago?
I mean, it's really one dinner ago. You just ate dinner.
Wait, what did I make? Oh, I made garlic, caper, lemon chicken.
Wow.
With a side of mashed potatoes and some spiced roasted broccoli.
Wow. Spiced.
Yes.
Okay.
It was very good.
Well.
And with that, we went on some strange adventures, just like our next book, Strange Adventures number 11 from DC Comics, written by Tom King, art by Mitch Drads and Evan Doc Shaner. And first of all, a big apology that we've been saying his name is Mitch Drads for, or at least I have, forever now. That's not his name. Yes. Mitch Drads. So I'm sorry about that.
Drads.
But Drads. But this is following up on the big revelation of the last issue that Alina, is that her name, is not actually the villain here. It's actually Adam Strange, who made a deal with the Picts to keep his daughter alive in exchange for sparing Ron and also giving them Earth. And that's why they're winning on Earth right now. She found out about it. This issue is all about the two of them dealing with it. Great. Man, we've talked so much about how Tom King slowly draws things out and pieces them out. But the shit hit the fan the last issue, and it continues to hit it this issue in a big way.
And I really love the way, I mean, not to just be the love guy, but this series is great, and the way that Alana is like being intense and sort of unlikable throughout this issue, but she's right here, and it makes for just a very tense read, and we get two different time periods of them sort of working together and them in conflict, and Tom King just is always putting a lot of ideas on the table and letting us take them in.
Yeah, I mean, this is a little bit of like, it feels like we got the reveal a long time ago that Adam Strange is an asshole, and she's finally kind of catching up to that in this issue. It was nice to see her punch him in the face a bunch. Very much enjoyed that.
But do you not feel sympathy for him at all?
Not
given
really.
What he went through in a lot of the
issues?
Once
he pulled the gun on her? Nah, not really.
Given all the things he went through with the a very intense torture, I think maybe that's a larger point that Tom King is making about what war, torture, what those things do to you, and sort of reset your moral clock to a point where it is much more about smaller ideas and more connected. You're like just trying to survive and keep your family alive.
Okay. No comment.
Is that
from
a strange?
No,
is that a strange adventure for you?
Let's move on then. Let's move on. Talk about Black Cat number 8 from Marvel, written by Jed McKay, art by C.F. Villa. This is kicking off the Infinity Score storyline that is picking up from Infinite Destinies annuals that have not actually ended yet. So classic publishing goof that's going on right now. But this is another great fun caper from Jed McKay and team that have really amped up what Black Cat is and what she can do in the Marvel Universe. I thought this was a lot of fun. Justin, I know you're a big fan of these. What'd you think of this one?
One of my favorite books on the stands right now. I love the way that this book is treating Black Cat and her team. It's just great heists every issue with just like great references. We get some Shakespeare in here. Got the movie The Saint in here. Like, it's just really smart writing. The fight between Black Cat and Nick Fury here is really good. And then the reveal at the end, it's just using... This book feels like so right now in the Marvel Comics universe. And I hope a ton of people are reading it.
I'm glad that Justin likes his book. I think that it's, you know, it's fun. It's Black Cat. Yeah, I'm happy for you. I'm glad that you have a book that you're enjoying so much. It's great. You know, Black Cat doing Black Cat stuff, which is fun and cool. And then somehow she outwits Fury, which is okay. All right. Okay. Sure. Sure.
You're a cat guy. What's up?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. To be fair, it's Nick Fury Jr. So he's got like
that's true.
It's a little less.
Also, it's Black Cat's book, so you know that's kind of how it's going to work with comics. Yeah,
Nick Fury wins and he kills her. Would that be better?
Yeah. Well, you know, sometimes Alex stories don't have to come around to a perfect circle.
Okay, that doesn't make any sense.
What is
in this context? Made in Korea, number 3 from Image Comics, written by Jeremy.
Wait, Alex, what do you like this book?
Oh yeah, I think this is super fun. I really enjoyed this. I wish we had read the Infinite Destinies annuals before we got here, but very curious to see how this goes. Clearly, now that the Infinity Stones are part of people, she's either trying to steal the stones from them or steal the people. Either way, that sounds super fun and maybe kind of gross as she pulls some stones out of people. I don't know. We'll see what happens. And if Black Cat gets the Infinity Gauntlet, that's pretty messed up and fun too.
Love it.
Good times. Made in Korea, number 3 from Image Comics, written by Jeremy Holtz, art by George Schall. This is very quickly becoming one of my favorite books about a little baby robot who is slowly figuring out how to be human. At the same time, the guy who gave her some errant programming is trying to track her down and bring her back so he can get the programming out of her. Pete, I remember you and I talked about this one, the last issue. We were very worried what was going to happen after the cliffhanger there, where after she met some bad boys at school and they showed her some guns, things get progressively worse here in a very bad way. But I love how this series is just going for it, like really pushing things in terms of politics, in terms of emotion, in terms of the characters. It makes me nervous for them. It makes me scared. But that's exactly the place that you should be in a book like this.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I am very scared with this book. As parents, you know, this has to be terrifying to you. You know, a kid falling in with a other kids who just want to, you know, rob
banks.
I hate
it when my kids fall in with other kids. That's the worst.
It's got to be nerve-wracking because it's like, what if those kids are mini bank robbers? Mm-hmm. And then next thing you know, my kid's robbing banks. You know?
So my kids going to camp right now. I don't know if you do the same thing, Justin, but every day before I send them off, I'm like, now kids, don't make any friends today.
Yeah.
Okay, have fun. Bye.
But here's the thing. Kids are going to rob a couple banks. It's just part of growing up. You just got to make sure they're robbing the right bank, not some big fancy bank, but more of a kid bank.
By the way, where are your kids, Bonnie and Clyde, going to camp this year?
They're at where you take a money laundering camp.
They're at a money laundering camp.
Smart, it's really you just got to learn to teach the skills they're going to use.
Yeah,
but cool. I like this book. I think the art in this book is really good, and I agree with you. The visual storytelling, I think, is really cool here, sort of throughout. And it does feel like that sort of cool sci-fi indie feature almost movie. I think this could easily be like an Ex Machina type movie.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Ooh. Next up, Infinite Frontier, number 3 from DC Comics, written by Joshua Williamson, art by Paul Pelletier, Jesus Marino, Tom Derenek, and Zermonico. In this issue, we're continuing to get this broad scope of the DC universe as something has gone wrong. We don't see him in this issue, but Darkseid is controlling Psycho Pirate and the Black Lanterns or something like that. But I'm digging this. I like this. I know I keep saying it every issue, but I think it's very effectively giving off those 52 vibes from back in the day. And I was initially a little resistant because I didn't want to get into another event, but now I'm very curious to see where this goes.
I agree. I'm also like, this one really kind of got me on board. This issue did a great job of like starting with these like headlines and stuff to kind of bring us into the story. I love this President Superman character. This is such a cool Superman who's like, you know, it's not all about punching. We got to talk things out, Magog. I thought that was Magog. Very cool. Right, Magog. You got to talk it out, Magog. Magog. You
gotta be like, Magog. Hey, Magog. Yo, we got to talk this out, Magog.
Sit down. Let's chop it up. Come on.
Yeah. Pasta, yeah, using Magog. That Philly accent. I like this series a lot. This issue felt very much sort of in the middle, a middling issue of like...
Oh, dear bullshit.
Like I wanted to hear, I wanted to see a little bit more of a story take the lead in a lot of ways that I think 52, the new 52 did sort of share. This is sharing focus too much, I think.
This is at the same time, I will say that this is such a deep dive. If you've not been nonstop reading DC Comics for the past, I don't know, ever, like
since lifetime.
Yeah. Lifetime, something like that. Because if you don't know every version of Superman and the whole continuity, and also same thing with like Roy Harper and Infinity Inc. and things like that, none of this matters to you whatsoever.
Infinity Inc. is back in this issue.
They're back, baby.
Come on, yeah.
Because you demanded it. And again, I'm enjoying this. I'm liking this, but like, I don't know, man.
What's up, my guy?
That Texas Blood number 8 from Image Comics by Chris Condon and Jacob Phillips. We are continuing the second arc of this book as we delve into a potentially satanic cult in this small town in Texas, while in the present, our main cop character is dealing with issues with his memory and health at the same time. The real standout for me here, as always, is Jacob Phillips' art, which I think is gorgeous. What do you guys think about this issue?
I like this comic a lot. It feels like it's carving out its own territory in that sort of Ed Brubaker, Sean Phillips vein. This is definitely like getting its own spot. And I think it's really setting a nice world for these characters. And I like it.
Yeah, I was really impressed with kind of like the flashback kind of toning and then kind of like dealing with this girl and her death in such a creative, amazing, powerful, sad way. I think the storytelling this is really great. There's a lot said without saying anything, like the showing of people's eyes and stuff. It's really emotional. And even like the sit down in the booth is kind of fun in different ways. I think this is a very interesting story being told by people who really know what they're doing, and the art's really fantastic.
Next up, Batman Reptilian number 2 from DC Comics, written by Garth Ennis, art by Liam Sharp. In this issue, Batman is continuing to investigate the mystery of who has been taking bites, literally, out of the villains of Gotham City. It's probably not Killer Croc, because that feels like the most opposite thing, obvious thing at this point. But
he's a bite guy. Guy is the bite.
Yeah, he bites people a lot, but this is gross and gory, and Liam Sharp's art is great. It reminds me a little bit of Ben Templesmith in a certain way. But I really like this. I think this is a perfect use of the black label on DC's part. What about you guys? Pete, what about you? You love the Ennis in particular.
I do. Thank you for pointing that out. Big fan of the Ennis.
Ennis the Ennis.
Garth Ennis, the Menace. First off, gotta talk about this art. I love how dark and creepy it is in this kind of painty type of way. It's a great look for Gotham. It's really
and you
kind
know
of
paint because you've been drinking it all night, right, Pete?
That's right. Just water and paint.
Just water. And just paint. Water, guys. It's just
a little bit of paint.
Just water. It's just such a cool fit for Garth Ennis because he has this kind of edge to him. But sometimes I'm like, yo, this is pretty harsh. Like, Batman is fucking straight up a dick to Penguin. The way he talks to him and treats him is a little squinch too much. But, you know, I got to trust the Ennis. He knows what he's doing.
This is fine. I don't know.
Oh,
wow.
Come on, man.
Not my thing. The art's cool. I agree with the Ben Templesmith comparison is cool, but I'm just like, it feels like, haven't we been here?
Wow.
Haven't we been here?
Interesting.
Come on, man.
Well, let's move on to something that I think you surprisingly liked quite a bit then, Justin. Headlopper number 16 from Image Comics by Andrew McLean. You've been a big booster of this book since the very beginning, since issue
from
one.
The jump.
You've been the main person.
Don't you dare.
Been pushing this title for so long, despite a lot of people on this podcast not being on board with the lopping of heads.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I like this book a lot. I said this as on the live podcast as well. This feels like just playing a great old NES game. It's like playing Zelda, where you're a Gauntlet. You're fighting your way through. Gauntlet, you're unlocking the mysteries. You're getting through stuff. It's funny. It's great action. I'm invested in the mythology. The art's fantastic. It's just a great comic.
Pete, what about you? You're kind of a late adopter to this book. Go ahead.
Sort of new to the book.
Oh my God. Go fuck yourself. So I've been saying since the first issue, this is glorious. This is just so much fun. It's great to have like Conan the Barbarian, but like cartoony.
No, his name's Headlopper. I think you're confused about the book.
I was making a comparison.
Oh, sorry. It's hard to tell with a new reader.
Conan the Barbarian, by the way, is based on the character of Gru, the Wanderer. Oh my God. In case you're wondering.
Wow, a lot of competing ideas happening right now.
Go ahead.
It's creative. It's fun. It's also great, like the kind of like the eye for storytelling. One of the kind of cool things about these epic adventures, it's also the little small details, you know, like you have smaller characters who kind of notice things that are off the beaten path that the bigger characters don't have time for or don't even notice. So I really appreciate that kind of stuff of like all the different things that a group brings to the table. So very cool, very enjoyable. I love the ensemble cast.
Well, maybe you'd like this book. If you seem like sort of interested in Headlopper, but maybe you'd like Little Side Character.
Oh my God.
Number one.
I would.
A book.
Check it out. I really like this issue as well. The very dumb thing that I judge issues of Headlopper on is how many heads were lopped. The last issue, not a lot of heads lopped.
Yeah.
This issue, lots of heads lopped.
Made up for it.
A lot. Yes, definitely made up for it.
Your criticism and then was like, no.
Lopped.
Listen, the art's always good. You always know what you're getting with this book. It's always a lot of fun to read, but this one in particular I thought was great. And with all those lopping of heads, I'll tell you what, there is one head, guys, that you do not want to lop. And that's your little head. You know what I'm talking about? You don't want to lop that off.
What?
I do know what you're talking about, and I don't know if I like it.
Well, here's the thing. Thankfully, that is not an issue with this week's sponsor, the Manscaped Performance Package 4.0. You're never going to have to worry about that.
100%. Yeah, they've got the Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer, Weed Whacker ear and nose hair trimmer, Crop Preserver ball deodorant, Crop Reviver toner, plus two free gifts, performance boxer briefs, wearing them, and the Shed travel bag.
You can't, every time you wear them on Tuesdays, is this just part of your rotation?
Yeah, you have seven pairs of underwear and...
It's not a hard and fast rotation, but, you know, what goes around comes around. And part of that is my performance boxer briefs.
All right. Well, as the person who's used the Lawnmower 4.0 on this podcast, I love it. It handles well. You can feel safe and secure, not worrying about nicking your nuts. And the light is a fantastic thing.
Nicking your nuts.
I'm glad that they put a light down there. You need it.
Son, come here, sit down. I have one thing to tell you as you leave my home. Don't nick your nuts. That's great, Pete, but don't forget the Weed Whacker's 9,000 RPM motor-powered 360-degree rotary dual-blade system. You did. The nose and ear hair trimmer provides proprietary skin-safe technology. Come on.
Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code FANSIDED20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code FANSIDED20 at manscaped.com. Achieve pubic glory this year with Manscaped.
Stop yes, saying
it's
that.
About time.
It's about time, which is the thing that I run myself down with. So I smell very nice there, but I guess I should start using the deodorant instead. Let's move on to talk about Something is Killing the Children, number 18 for Boom Studios, written by James Tynion IV again, art by Werther Deldaria.
Again, how dare you say that?
So we're continuing the House of Slaughter arc, which jumped back in time and gives us sure the did. Origin of our main character. Also, this comes hot on the heel of the news that we're getting a spin-off series for this called The House of Slaughter that is going to focus on some other characters there, which I think is very exciting. I really like this arc a lot. I love jumping back in time, finding out more about the House of Slaughter. And I'm really curious to see how this spins off as well. James is building this little mini empire here. Oh, I think it also got picked up option for TV this week as well. So
that is correct. And let's not forget, James won an Eisner this past week as well.
Yeah. So as the best writer. Big week for the guy. Big week for this title. What'd you guys think about this issue?
It is great. Like, I've really been enjoying these. I think they've really picked up steam. One of my criticisms for the series was it felt like not a lot was happening a lot in the series. A lot of, like, characters just sort of, like, being in their place. And these flashbacks have really upped the sort of narrative drive, I think. And it's really, really good.
Love this book. This continues to be just absolutely fantastic. JT4 is killing it as per usual. It's such a cool reveal with this doll that we've kind of seen throughout this series. I'm just so glad we're finally taking the time to go back and kind of get the origin story of one of the best characters in the book. So I think this is just really fantastic the way this kind of story is unfolding. I love every single issue, the art, the writing, it's all bananas good.
Checkmate number 2 from DC Comics, written by Brian Michael Bendis, art by Alex Maleev. In this issue, we are continuing to see our detective heroes fight against Leviathan. What do you guys think? Well, here's the thing, is that it's Brian Michael Bendis. You know what you're getting at this point. Alex Maleev, phenomenal art. My issue here is, even though everything is well characterized, well drawn, it's a lot of former Manhunter, whatever his name is now. Is he called Leviathan or something like that? Just like,
technically, I believe.
Yeah,
so
just kind of posturing and being like, I'm the biggest badass in the entire DC universe. Here it comes. And there's little bits that I like. I think the stuff with Talia al Ghul is great.
Cool.
She was left in a really bad place in the last issue and comes back in a big way this issue, which I think is smart. The focus on Lois Lane is great. But otherwise, I just want this to get somewhere. Like, I want this to do something, you know?
I feel like that's been just indicative, or it's been endemic to a lot of Bendis's work in DC. Like, it feels like it's like you're at a party and this guy's cornering you and being like, no, this is really cool. And you're like, hey, man, I don't know about the cryptocurrency you're talking about right now. But like, you want to go buy the guacamole for a little bit. And it feels like a lot of his books have been like, this is so cool. You don't even know how cool this is. And I'm like, I don't, because you're not showing me, you're telling me how cool it is.
I don't know. I think this is an intense story. The art's glorious. Cool use of Superman in here. I think you're going to get in this book, and it's delivering. So I don't know what you're complaining about. But I just think it's a solid comic. Like, I was like, oh, this is going to be kind of like the Leviathan series, kind of, but we're going to explore different parts, different things. Okay, cool. Great. Sign me up. And that's exactly what we're getting. Yet you guys are like, oh.
Yep, that's us to a T. Let's move on then and talk about The Scumbag, number 9 from Image Comics, written by Rick Remender, art by Jonathan Wayshack. In this issue, our main scumbag has changed the entire world to be exactly like him. He is traveling back in time to make sure that he can keep it that way. Meanwhile, the other forces on the moon, I believe, are trying to make it into something else or save the world in some way before it completely collapses into a cocaine orgy. This is as ridiculous and over the top as you might expect from the description. It's a lot of fun. It's very silly.
Agree. I want to highlight page 10 specifically, which is where we get the scumbag running through a little base. I feel like this just reminds me of the kind of like comic page I would draw as a kid and be like, look how cool it is. My hero's doing this thing. And it just feels like this is what this comic is. It's just a fun space where Remender gets to just cut loose and be weird. And if you want that, get this book.
Yeah, I think it is kind of weird and over the top, but there are like some fun, really kind of like fun, great pages to kind of look at, like the scumbag world with the kind of like a Megadeth things going on in the background is really kind of crazy cool. There's just kind of like, it reminds me of different kind of like Mad Magazine kind of covers and stuff like that, where if you look in the sides, there's all sorts of crazy things happening. And I'm glad you pointed out that page, Justin, because it's like, it's a really great panel and page setup, but it's also like, you know, for this kind of lazy scumbag, what he does do a lot of fighting for what he believes in this issue. So it's interesting to see what kind of motivates him.
Next up, Good Luck, number 2 from Boom Studios, written by Matthew Erman, art by Stefano Simeone. This takes place in a world where good luck and bad luck both exist and are personified. A bunch of people who have absolutely no good luck whatsoever are trying to travel to the center of the zone where this has all gone down to try to return the world to some sort of order. I think we were a little iffy on the first issue, but thought this was an intriguing premise. So I was curious to check out the second issue. What'd you guys think about this one?
Well, that you really summed that up well. My whole bit was going to be like, good luck explaining this comic, but it seems like you have a real grasp on everything that was happening. I read this a couple times and I didn't get what was happening that clear. So I guess congrats on being a better reader than I am.
Thank you so much.
Good luck, Magog. It is, and to your point, Pete, it is a heady concept, especially in that first issue. This issue starts to let the rubber hit the road with it a little bit, where it's like these characters go through. There's a reason why they put them in there to try to sort of save the world from this very particular concept, and where I won't spoil what happens, but I like where the story ends up at the end of the issue. And I think the third issue is where we're going to really propel forward with some more characters.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. I think this is like the paneling and the layouts are so cool and interesting, and the characters are bigger in life in all the right ways. So it's really fantastic to kind of read and look at. I just wish I was kind of like in it more, but yeah, I agree. I'm hoping by the next issue things will really click and I'll be able to follow a little bit better.
Yeah, good luck issue 3.
Oh, thanks, man.
Vinyl number 2 from Image Comics, written by Doug Wagner, art by Daniel Hilliard. This is following a serial killer who is trying to save an FBI agent from a death weird cult something or other. Things definitely pick up this issue with the introduction of several more bonkers serial killers fighting this immortal death cult or whatever's happening. It's gross. It's bloody. I really like the art and design quite a bit. And if anything, this issue was surprisingly more straightforward in its execution. Justin, it looks like you want to say something about this.
It is maybe a little bit straightforward with like just detailing what's happening, but I still don't know what is happening. Like, this is the issue. what Pete was saying about good luck, like this one, I'm like, what? What is this? The art, I do think, has like big Invincible vibes. And I think maybe we talked about that with the first issue, but otherwise, I'm like, what? You get a little bit of sense of the character, but I just don't know why anyone's doing anything, and I don't know what the deal is. I like the vibe of the cult, feels very cool as a villain, but otherwise, I'm like, why do you put that mask on, dude?
Yeah, the cult thing is like really gross. It's like, hey, do you love Invincible? Yes. Do you want it to be gorier, more insane, and not be able to kind of follow what's going on? Sure. Well, yeah, get on board.
Well, to be fair, you said sure to the answer to that question, so it's kind of your fault.
Yeah, it is my fault. But I do think this is enjoyable. I'm not sure what's going on or why everybody's murderous, But sure, yeah, like fucking insanity and violence turned to 11.
Dense Vincible.
Ooh. Hmm. Berserker, number 4 from Boom Studios, written by Keanu Reeves and Matt Kent, art by Ron Garney. In this issue, we continue to get backstory on our main character as we jump through time. He is an immortal warrior played by Keanu Reeves, pretty much straight up here. And this is great. It's Ron Garney art. It's Matt Kent and Keanu Reeves writing. It's really well done, crazy intense action. This is maybe a little lighter on the story than the previous issues, but I still liked it quite a bit.
Yeah, it feels like we've been telling a lot of this, like, man, he could fight everybody and never really got hurt. I do think the story starts to move a little bit in the end, and I like where it ends up. I definitely will pick up the next issue of this, but I'm ready for a shift. Shout out to the Raphael Grampa cover of this issue, which is dope.
Yeah, I really am impressed with the Garney's art here, because it's really the kind of difference between the kind of like the time periods we're at, and the art is just fantastic. It's really cool the way the kind of like all the violence and old timiness are met here. I think this is just a crazy kind of over the top fighting comic, but man, I am not bored of it. It's still very enjoyable and very interesting. And it's weird that Keanu Reeves is the star in writing it, but it's also really cool.
Let's move from one immortal warrior to another. The Old Guard, Tales Through Time, number 4 from Image Comics, written by Matt Fraction and David F. Walker, art by Steve Lieber and Matthew Clark. As you can tell from the title, this is another two stories told in the world of the Old Guard. I really like this a lot, particularly the Matt Fraction, Steve Lieber story. The front story was so good and so well told. But they're both really solid stories, and I enjoyed them. What'd you guys think?
I agree. Both stories are really good. I mean, the Old Guard universe, I didn't know that was a thing, but it is. I feel like they are making another movie, right, for Netflix. Mm-hmm. So it definitely feels like this is something that we'll get to see more of. And I think they're doing a great job of exploring this world, both with our sort of main characters, as well as getting off into the weeds a little bit. Really fun.
Yeah, I mean, Selvin, you've always been a Fraction head, so I'm not surprised. I mean, this is just kind of like...
I'm more of a Decimal Place guy.
Yeah, yeah. But I just feel that, like...
please, don't let this divide us.
Oh, my God.
Yeah,
please. You guys are dads, and you're making jokes. So anyway,
these are math jokes, Pete.
Yeah, we're just trying to plus up the podcast.
There's still dad jokes. Yeah,
I guess you can use the remainder of the time to finish your review.
I would hope so. It would be nice if I was able to take a turn.
Just say your point?
Yeah. I guess not. This is a four quadratic book. It appeals to everyone.
Go ahead, Pete. I'm really not going to say anything.
Okay, yeah. So this, I was just surprised at how like cold this is. Like, I guess in the kind of the movie, Charlize Theron brought a little bit more heart to the character, and this, it's like, you know how to make a ghost town, kill everybody. It's like, holy shit! All right, Old Guard, take it down a notch. But I guess that's how you make a ghost town.
Yep,
it's true.
Yeah, how to make a ghost town soup. That's a book that I read. All right, I think that's it for our review.
Yes, it's not it, because you know, you had asked us to, you know, you're like, hey, you reached out in email like, hey, if you guys want to add anything to the stack, even though it's way too many books, but you know, I appreciate your time.
No, I definitely did that. I sent a text before hours before.
Yeah.
what is happening here? This is a weird rebellion that occurs at the end of the stack every week, where Pete's like, yeah, well, the Pete will rise again.
That's right. Here's the thing, Pete. If there are extra books you want to talk about, more than happy to talk about them. Just like when I sent a text at 4 p.m. and said, hey, let us know if there's any other books you want to talk about. Then Justin and I can talk about them if you let us know what they are, rather than keeping them secret and private.
It's very funny, though. Pete treats you like you're the stodgy dean. It's like, oh, you want to talk about a book? Well, fill out the form and apply for the book. When all you literally have to do is be like, I want to talk about Spider-Man number 2 or whatever you want to do.
So Wonder Woman number 776. I wanted to talk about it because Jill Thompson is doing the art. Jill Thompson, who I love. She does like these amazing like watercolors with her art. And so I'm just, you know, she was on one book and is no longer there. And I was worried about her and her art and what was happening. So it's just nice to see her on this book. And it's really worth it for the art alone, Wonder Woman, and kind of a lovely watercolor situation. And it was just really nice. And I was really happy to see Jill working on this book. So that's all I wanted to say.
Yeah, I agree. That was a really good book that I also read, Pete. That was really well done as Wonder Woman goes to Fairyland, continuing the arc here that we get with Becky Cloonan and Michael W. Conrad. I continue to be intrigued at the way they are taking this and the way that they are growing all of this different mythology that's happening with Wonder Woman. We could probably also talk about the latest issue of Amazing Spider-Man. That's another title that
it's
I read.
It's a game of chicken that I don't know if we like. Haven't we done this enough?
Find out a lot more about Kindred here. Turns out that Kindred and Harry Osborn might be two different people. What's going on with that, right, Pete? You read that one as well, right?
Yeah, I did read that one as well. And I didn't think that it was that cool, actually, because these two characters are driving me nuts. They're just giving us a little bit, but they're not really telling us what's going on. And I'm sick of it. It is driving me crazy.
They're driving your nuts, but they're not nicking your nuts. And that's why Manscaped is doing its job.
You're right, my gog.
If you'd like to support our podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Crowdcast and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comic books. iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and more. Until next time, we'll see you at the virtual comic book shop.
Okay.